الذين ينضموا للاستماع إلى راديو بلدي أو الراديو عربي أمريكي ويعنى بقضايا العرب في المهجر. برامجنا في راديو بلدي كل يوم جمعة من 8 حتى 9 صباحا في بث حي ومباشر عبر WNZK Radio 690 AM. صباح الخير بلدي، صباح الخير لكل مستمعينا.
Welcome to Radio Baladi, the first Arab, Middle Eastern and American simulcast radio show. Radio Baladi is broadcast every Friday morning on WNZK 690 AM from 8 until 9 Eastern Time on Des Moines, Michigan. Our call-in number 248-557-3300. And now, stay tuned for the best radio talk show on Arab and American issues.
This is Dr. Sahar Kamir. Welcome to my program, The Bridge. A monthly show bridging different cultures, communities, and faith traditions. Watch The Bridge on America's Voice of the Arab Network on all social media platforms.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the program, The Bridge, on U.S. Arab Radio. Ramadan Kareem, Ramadan Mubarak to everybody who is observing the holy month. And as we all know, there is a great humanitarian crisis unfolding in Gaza, claiming thousands of lives. More than 32,000 people have been killed, most of whom are women and children and elderly people. There is a huge medical crisis, a huge shortage of important supplies, humanitarian supplies, including food, gas, water, and medicine. And with me today discussing this important and very timely topic are Dr. Maher Kifri. He's a private physician practicing pulmonary medicine in the state of Michigan, and Mr. Khalil Meek, the Chief Development Officer with Life for Relief and Development. Welcome to the show, and thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you, sisters.
Thank you so much. And I want to really start with talking about the efforts of the organization or your own self in terms of the work you've been doing in the area of humanitarian aid and relief in general, before we delve into talking about the case or the specific situation in Gaza in particular. Mr. Khalil Meek, let me start with you just giving our listeners and viewers everywhere, please, an overall idea about Life for Relief and Development as an organization. How did it start? What is its own mission and vision? And what kind of work it's been doing in the area of humanitarian relief in general?
Okay. Thank you, Sarah. Life for Relief and Development is a global humanitarian aid and development organization. We're based in Southfield, Michigan, which is a suburb of Detroit. And our mission is to bring life-saving aid to those in need and contribute to the development of communities globally. We work to provide assistance by offering humanitarian services such as food or water, temporary shelter, as well as healthcare, education. We respond to poverty, famine, social and economic turmoil, natural disasters, war, and other catastrophes. And we work to deliver the essential supplies like medical care, shelter, and support services to help people meet their immediate needs and protect their dignity. So over the last 30 years, Life has distributed more than $600 million in humanitarian aid and relief in more than 55 countries. And our organization has played a significant role in improving the lives of countless individuals or communities across the globe. We're a nonprofit charity, 501c3. We hold consultative status with the Economic and Social Council of the United Nations. And as an organization, we're rated as a 4-star charity with 100% score on Charity Navigator.
What kind of humanitarian aid or relief Life has been actually providing in terms of supporting and helping the people of Gaza in the midst of this huge humanitarian crisis, please?
Yeah, Life's been working in Gaza since 2004. So for over 20 years now, we've been established. We have warehouses, offices, staff in Gaza, the West Bank, Jerusalem. We're accustomed to crisis, and we've dealt with the other crises on the borders around there, Syria and Turkey. And since October, since this crisis first started, we've been on the ground delivering fresh bread, fresh vegetables, fresh meat, delivering hot meals, food baskets, truckloads of medical equipment and supplies. Now we're delivering winterized, fireproof, high-quality tents, truckloads of flour, blankets, tankers of water, clean water. We repaired a water filtration system in Khan Yunus, and now we're providing truckloads of water, I think over 1 million gallons, to the IDB camps and schools, filtering or filling their smaller tanks every week. And now we're going to bring some solar panels and electricity in so that they can actually work and survive, both for work and survive. So this is the type of work we've been doing in Gaza. And we are bringing aid in through the Rafah border. But recently, the Jordanian border has opened. And to give you an idea, there used to be, or before the war, 600 trucks a day would pass through the Rafah crossing. Since the war started, it's been, you know, three trucks to 300 trucks when it wasn't closed. And it's averaging about 60 to 80 trucks a day in the crossing. So you can imagine the shortage of everything in Gaza. Recently, they just opened the Rafah border, the Jordanian border, and we're told about 120 trucks a day are getting through the Jordanian border now. But we want people to know that even though people have been saying the border's closed, it's not, and there are things getting in, and those who are working with the Egyptian authorities, the Israeli authorities, the Egyptian Red Crescent, and have established relations are able to get their aid into Gaza. So if they want to support any of these projects, let us know.
Thank you so much for this overview, Mr. Khalil Meek. And let me come to you, Dr. Maher Kifri. It is my understanding that as a medical doctor, you've also been doing a lot of humanitarian help and relief in general, and in terms of the Gaza crisis in particular. Can we start first with a general overview of what kind of humanitarian aid work you've been involved in as a medical doctor?
Well, I had the pleasure and honor, or the privilege actually, to join Rahma Worldwide, which is actually also centered in Detroit area, as to actually be part of the second medical mission with a group of about 20 doctors, entering Gaza to help the overwhelmed or collapsing medical system in Gaza, basically. I did bring two large backload of medical supply, antibiotics, medical equipments, suture kits, urgently need medications for local anesthesia, basically to give first aid to wounded civilians in Gaza hospitals. We spent 2 weeks. I personally went as far as Shuhada al-Aqsa Hospital, mm-hmm. and I volunteered in an emergency room, not only trying to help with the war casualties, but also I did help a lot of medical cases that the system has actually totally ignored due to the overwhelming injuries they receive with the very limited supply and very limited personnel in the hospital. So that was basically my role. And, I did bring with me those medical supply that were urgently needed. And I've used them from day one, pretty much.
Yeah, so it is my understanding that you have been actually in Gaza recently. Can right. you give our listeners and viewers an overview of what you actually saw there firsthand, what the situation actually looks there on the ground in real life?
Right. Of course, there's no word to describe it. I mean, you can say it's a disaster zone, overwhelming. I don't think the history did mention such a bad humanitarian situation where people have lost pretty much everything. They lost loved ones. They lost their homes. They lost their food, their money. People usually, you know, they have to wake up early in the morning if they survive bombing and to go and look for, you know, stand in line for water or food or try to collect wood to make a fire to do some cooking. So life was extremely hard. You know, I can only imagine how did these people survive? And you really have to filter all these, you know, painful events that happen and put it behind you so to kind of move forward. So the medical team itself was part of these people. These people also have homes. They lost loved one. They have to spend the majority of their day, like I said, you know, standing in lines for food or medicine or water. And they still come to the hospital to do some work and to help, you know, to do their duty, which is actually pretty much free of charge because they didn't get paid for 5 months to help, you know, the patients and the war casualties, give them first aid. By the way, and they were very professional people. I mean, I've learned a lot from this short experience, how resilient the people of Gaza are. It's basically a big prison. It's physically a prison with, you know, as you know, it's have large walls surrounding the Gaza area and the Gaza cities. And these people, you know, already lived on humanitarian aids even before the war. So imagine the situation with the siege, especially from the Israeli side. Except for this little, you know, trickling humanitarian supply that's coming from Rafah crossing. That was the situation. I've tried to basically, you know, keep straight face and focus on being a doctor and trying to filter all the pain around me because you can actually get overwhelmed. You know, your heart will be broken. The extreme frustration beginning you're living in with the limited supply and inability to help a lot of people. I lost a lot of patients simply because I don't have enough diagnostic or medical tools or medications to help. I know how to save them, but you know, with such a limited supply of the hospital resources, we've lost a lot of medical and surgical patients in the hospital. That was very painful.
Absolutely. I also heard about a lot of procedures, medical procedures having to be done without even anesthesia, especially when you have a young child or little child involved and they have to amputate this person's, you know, leg or arm without even anesthesia. It's just unbelievable. The whole world has been startled by these images and by the heroism of the Gazan people, but also by the heroism of those who are volunteering. Let's talk a little bit about this culture of volunteerism, people who just volunteer their own time and effort and money, whether they are actually locals from Gaza itself or those who are coming from abroad, from overseas, to offer some help and support. Can you please comment on that, Dr. Maher?
Yeah, of course. Like I said, the medical doctors in Gaza, they were faithful coming to work, covering their shifts in spite of all the painful situation they live in, the miserable situation with no home, sometimes no family. I did have a nurse that actually lost his two kids and wife, and I think he lost his parents and his house, and he's still coming to work to provide services. And they were really very highly efficient and professional people. Of course, you know, I did meet a selected group of doctors that actually left their families and works or homes overseas and their businesses to come and travel thousands of miles away from the UK, from France, from Jordan, from the United States to help provide some care or some help to that overwhelmed medical team. Of course, that you know, they did absolutely heroic work, especially the surgeons that came with me. Of course, they have to face this painful selection of patients. It's like which patient is more viable so we can save, because we're not going to be able to save everyone. Imagine if, you know, after like you hear a bombing, then 10, 15 minutes later, the hospital is filled with casualties. Not just, you know, any casualty. You have like head and chest and abdomen injuries. It requires really multiple specialties, multiple surgeries to save. And not only that, but there's not enough space. I mean, you get a wave after wave in a hospital that has like limited capacity for like maybe 100 to 200 patients, and you're getting one wave after another. I mean, they have an intensive care unit that only has like 9 beds. And we're instructed to keep those beds open for the war casualties. So unfortunately, we lost a lot of medical patients that could have been saved by being put on a life support, but because there's no resources, we have to lose a lot of medical patients, you know, dying from pneumonia or simple dehydration or sepsis or asthma attack or something really simple that we normally in the United States, I mean, we're very aggressive with technology and x-rays and medications and ICU and resources. For us, it's the huge difference between the situation over there and the situation we're used to. The luxury situation we're used to in the United States was basically humongous, you know, and it's a very painful situation.
I can't even imagine. I mean, having to make a decision whose life to save, that's a kind of decision that no doctor, no human being has to ever deal with.
Right.
We come back to this discussion right after this commercial break. Stay tuned, please.
At Top Rehab Physical Therapy Clinic in Dearborn, we provide effective physical therapy sessions in order to limit pain and discomfort. Top Rehab provides physical therapy care for any diagnosis prescribed by a physician, and we regularly see and treat conditions such as stroke, TMJ, fibromyalgia, sciatica, joint pain, and more. We use a variety of pain management methods, including modalities, soft tissue mobilization, and therapeutic exercise. If you're in need of physical rehabilitation or physical therapy, get the highest quality health care at Top Rehab. Most insurance is accepted, and we're open Monday, Wednesday, and Friday 8 to 6, Tuesday and Thursday 8 to 5, and Saturday 10 till 2. Call for an appointment today at 313-846-0555. That's 313-846-0555. Choose Top Rehab Physical Therapy Clinic on Michigan Avenue in Dearborn. Life's too short to be in pain. Life for Relief and Development has now been rated as one of the best charities for humanitarian aid. Life's humanitarian projects span the globe, and Life is celebrating its 30th anniversary of providing essential life-saving aid to people and communities in 36 countries, regardless of race, color, religion, or cultural background. Where there is life, there is hope. And when disaster occurs here or around the world, including being one of the first responders to the Turkey-Syria earthquake crisis, Life for Relief and Development rushes in to provide food, medical aid, and shelter to those in need. We are looking to help the earthquake victims, and we take 0% overhead on emergency donations. So please help improve these efforts. Learn more about our involvement to help the helpless and bring hope where it's needed most, and make your tax-deductible donation to Life for Relief and Development now at lifeusa.org or call 248-424-7493. That's 248-424-7493.
This is Dr. Sahar Kamir. Welcome to my program, The Bridge. A monthly show bridging different cultures, communities, and faith traditions. Watch The Bridge on America's Voice of the Arab Network on all social media platforms.
Welcome back to the show, everyone. This is your host, Dr. Sahar Kamis, and we're talking today about a heartbreaking and very passionate and impactful topic, the humanitarian and medical aid to Gaza, facts and challenges. And with me this morning discussing this important and timely topic are Dr. Maher Kifri and Mr. Khalil Meek. Dr. Maher Kifri is a physician practicing pulmonary medicine in Michigan, and Mr. Khalil Meek is the development officer of Life for Relief and Development. Mr. Khalil, a lot of people have a question on their mind. There are so many different groups, organizations, agencies, claiming to be delivering the needed aid and support to Gaza. And many people are, you know, having good intention. They really want to help. They really want to support, but they don't know which organization to trust, which one is more trustworthy, which one is more credible, and which one is not. Can you please give some, you know, kind of helpful tip or advice for our listeners and viewers everywhere to know how can they possibly identify the ones which are more credible and trustworthy and the ones which are not?
Well, that's an excellent question. The majority of NGOs or nonprofit organizations who are collecting funds for Gaza are actually delivering or are supporting the refugees who got out of Gaza. So either in Jordan or Egypt, they're taking care of those who escape. Very few are working in Gaza. So those that may claim to be working in there, you might want to have them prove or somehow verify that. But in general, you would vet the organization by, you know, there's an excellent service in the U.S. called Charity Navigator that mm-hmm. basically records all of the nonprofits and gives them a score based on their transparency, their accuracy, their accounting, everything they do. And, you know, that score can give you an idea of who to trust or who not to trust. But in general, the only way to verify whether they're in Gaza is for them to prove it, because there's no list of organizations. We were mentioned by USAID as working in Gaza, and they said, you know, we're one of the organizations you can donate to, but I wouldn't know. I couldn't verify myself right in Gaza without just taking pictures or somehow, you know, trying to share with you that this is actually happening. But from the people on the ground, most of the aid is going to the refugees and the people who made it to Jordan and or Egypt.
So maybe there's also a responsibility on the part of those who are making the donations. So just Google these organizations, find out more about them, about their background, about their activities, what they're actually doing on the ground. And you also mentioned the Charity Navigator, which is a way for us to trust or to be able to find out more credible information. What is the website for this particular Charity Navigator, Mr. Khalil, if you happen to know it?
CharityNavigator.org.
CharityNavigator.org is the place to go in order to check the authenticity and trustworthiness of different organizations doing charity work on the ground. I want to come to the question, Mr. Khalil, about also from your own experience doing this kind of work. How would you rank the most important challenges facing Gaza at the moment in terms of rank order? I know that's a difficult question because all of these are pressing and important needs. There is no question about it. But if you were to actually rank order these needs and challenges facing the people of Gaza right now, what would be your own rank order?
Well, we do this on a regular basis based on our capacity, but not having been there, listening to Dr. tell us about the conditions of people dying just because they don't have medicine or have room or capacity, obviously that would be the number one priority, is to give people a chance to live. The second is obviously the food and the shelter. And most organizations are capable of providing the food and the hot meals if they can get it into Gaza. Mm-hmm. So that would be a priority. But we've started now to think about long-term solutions, and we decided to manufacture 100,000 tents uh-huh. in Turkey that we use to manufacture tents for Syria, so they're approved. And these are three-layer tents that have a winterized shell on the outside. The second shell is for fireproofing, and the third shell is one that you could just have on a normal day when things are a good temperature. So you could adjust the climate inside your tent. These are big enough to house a family of six or seven. And we're bringing them in from Turkey direct to Rafah and now setting them up in Gaza. And the need is overwhelming because every building you see destroyed and the news are on video, it means these are displaced families that are either sleeping on the streets or wherever they can find shelter. And this is something that's going to last for 2-3 years to recover from, regardless of how soon it ends. So this is one of the biggest priorities we've focused on recently.
Absolutely. And these tents are made in Turkey?
Yeah, these tents are made in Turkey. They have a metal frame, not a wood frame. They're a lot lighter than some of the others trying to get into Gaza, and they last longer. So these are about 1,000 tents are being manufactured a day. We can get about 250 tents into one truck, and they cost about $400 per tent. So this is a commitment of about $40 million worth of tents to Gaza that Life has made. And we're accepting partnerships on this with any other NGOs where they can also participate, be recognized, get their logos on the tent, whatever they want, just to help out to expedite this project.
Absolutely. And partnership is always a very valuable resource. Whenever you have more than one organization helping out and supporting each other in solidarity, you can reach the best possible result. Thank you so much for that. And Dr. Meher, I'll come to you with the very same question about, you know, again, it's a difficult one, but, you know, rank ordering these different needs as well as challenges facing the people of Gaza right now. What would be your own rank order in terms of what you actually saw as an eyewitness on the ground doing important medical support work, see life-saving work on the ground in Gaza? What would you say in terms of rank ordering these different needs and challenges facing the people of Gaza at the moment?
I would put food and water first and then medicine. I mean, people simply dying from being hungry, from hunger. We've seen kids dying because of the cold weather, basically. A little infant that died, you know, freezing because, you know, they live outside in a shelter that's with no protection, no heat. So I think food and shelter, you talk about the majority of people in Gaza, majority of them are not really war casualties. They're civilians. They lost their homes. They lost their money. They lost their neighborhood, their family. They're just looking for food and shelter. So I think that I would put that as a number one. And I'll put the medical supply and the medical team as number two. Of course, Gaza needs everything. Need professionals, need food, need supply, need housing, need to be rebuilt. They need money. I mean, pretty much everything. Because, like I said, this is the people have been under siege since 2005. And they live on humanitarian aids. And now with the tight grip of the Israeli sides on everything that passes into Gaza, make things very hard for these people. But that's going to be my view of the situation.
Yeah,
and there's definitely also water, you know, just toxicity in the kind of polluted water that they have to use. Wouldn't that also be something of a top priority?
Yeah, definitely. We, you know, they use like whale water, which is actually a lot of time it's actually salty. So it's not even, you know, it's not something that will satisfy your thirst or rehydrate your body necessarily. It can do like an opposite and harmful effect on the body. Not to mention, I physically saw a lot of patients with like hepatitis A and all these epidemics, the flu and everything, because of the poor humanitarian situation, the poor living situation, the unsanitary situation they live in. They come to the emergency room in hundreds. It's overwhelming. And there's no medicine for these people. Not even a test to confirm. We usually used to rely on our clinical experience only. Mm-hmm. And that was pretty challenging for someone coming from the U.S., But yeah, that there was a lot of breakout of diseases in Gaza.
So it seems to me that everything is very much, you know, intertwined, like, you know, the lack of sanitary water, the lack of, you know, cleanliness and hygiene, the lack of sufficient food leads to obviously illness, and the illness cannot be treated because of the shortage of medical supplies. So it's like one cycle of poverty and misery and all types of diseases and suffering from what you are telling us.
Absolutely. Go ahead.
I was just going to add to another problem. Besides all of that, the truckloads that are getting into Gaza, I told you 60 to 80 a day on average from Rafah. That includes the humanitarian aid and commercial trucks, which are the business truckloads for food and aid going into Gaza. And the people that have lost their jobs, their houses, their livelihoods are forced to pay for these services that they don't, you know, that they can't get through the NGOs or the humanitarian aid services. And people are gouging them with the pricing. It's astronomical. I heard from my team leader in Gaza today that a tomato was being sold for, just one tomato, over, you know, $20 for a tomato, something like that.
$20, 20 US dollars?
Yeah, for one tomato.
Oh my God, that's unbelievable. That's
And it's worse in northern Gaza, where people have to smuggle in the actual commercial stuff because nobody can get there. And then when they get there, it's 1,000 times the price it normally would be.
Oh my God, it's unbelievable. Dr. Mehri, wanted to add something else?
No, the same thing we're talking, you know, everything has been expensive. You know, people getting free food is really rare for one reason or another. They have to buy that, and it's very expensive for a lot of reasons. I've seen patients in emergency room. They walked all the way from Gaza City to Deir el-Balah, where my hospital was, just to get to basically a civilization where he can get medicine and food and water. I had an elderly man, actually he didn't make it, unfortunately, but he walked all the way from Gaza to Deir el-Balah on foot, barefoot, trying to escape the disaster situation in the northern side. But, you know, it's like I said, it's, you know, the food and water are one of the main things that this place needs. Of course, like I said, it needs everything.
Absolutely. We'll come back to this very important discussion right after this commercial break. Stay tuned, please.
Are you going to start a restaurant or a grocery store soon? Do you need floor plans and designs? Call Naji Abood at 734-744-9796. Do you want to buy kitchen and restaurant equipment at discount prices? Call Naji Abood now, 734-744-9796. New Concept Products and Design, the trademark of kitchen equipment. 5% discount on all purchases of $75,000 or more. New Concept Products and Design, new location, 31185 Schoolcraft in Livonia. Learn more at www.newconceptproducts.com. Call Naji Abood, 734-744-9796.
Ziad Brand. Quality products from our family to yours. Ziad Brothers Importing offers the finest quality products, including brands like Sultan, Kraft, Nestle, Hook, Rico Picon, Donna, and many more. Ask your retailer to carry these fine products because you deserve the very best. For more information, visit our website at www.ziad.com. That's www.ziad.com. Ziad, quality products from our family to yours.
This is Dr. Sahar Kamir. Welcome to my program, The Bridge. A monthly show bridging different cultures, communities, and faith traditions. Watch The Bridge on America's Voice of the Arab Network on all social media platforms.
Welcome back to the show, everyone. This is your host, Dr. Sahar Kamis, another episode of The Bridge, and we're talking today about the humanitarian and medical aid to Gaza, the facts and challenges. And with me this morning discussing this important and timely topic are Mr. Khalil Meek. He is the development officer with Life for Relief and Development, and Dr. Maher Kifri, who is a physician practicing pulmonary medicine in Michigan. Mr. Khalil, before going to the commercial break, you were talking about the problem of aid entering Gaza. And you actually talked about the fact that not all the borders are closed. You said that there is some kind of, you know, trucks that are able to come into Gaza, but these are very few and far between. It is nothing compared to the 600 trucks per day that used to enter Gaza before the October 7th crisis erupted. So can you talk a little bit about the barriers and challenges which are actually obstructing the entrance and delivery of humanitarian and medical aid to Gaza?
Yes, and let me clarify my previous statement. I was talking about the Rafah border crossing only when it said the 60 to 80 trucks per day, mm-hmm. and they averaged 600 trucks before the crisis. Right. But most of the supplies for Gaza would come through Jordan. Before the crisis. And Jordan would bring in, you know, thousands of truckloads of product a day. And they've been closed since the beginning of the war. And they just recently opened the Jordanian crossing. And they're allowing maybe 100, 120 trucks per day through there. So there's the shortage is over, you know, several thousand trucks per day short. There are trucks there waiting to get in on Jordanian side and on the Gaza side, just stacking up, but unable to get through for either the lack of permission, the lack of whatever, they're being denied entry. And I'm told that the cost for the just staying one day per truckload is $300 a day. So those trucks that have been sitting there for a month or 2 months or as long as they have been are, you know, the resources add up, the product's not getting to where it needs to be. The borders are only letting in maybe 200 trucks a day, both sides. So it is it's a catastrophe that could be solved in a heartbeat. Just let the trucks through.
Absolutely. Thank you. And Dr. Meher, I'll come to you with the same question about the barriers and the challenges. What are, in your opinion, the most important barriers and challenges that have been obstructing the flow of aid and support to Gaza?
I basically have one word, is the Israeli grip on the situation. Even those trucks coming through Rafah crossing, they have to actually pass by Israeli checkpoints and not everything will get in. You know, if you're trying to send like medical supply or surgical equipments, any hardware for rebuilding houses or anything, that will be filtered out at the Israeli checkpoint. It's not, you know, there's a lot of stuff that's not allowed from their end. Only, you know, simple food or basic needs that. You know, something that might actually be rotten if you don't use it right away, kind of thing. So, you know, for that truck to actually end up emptying the load in on the Palestinian side, it's a long task and it's a process and it's a lengthy, difficult process, and that's why these humanitarian's aid have been really trickling. I mean. We've seen, you know, driving to the Rafah crossing, we've seen, you know, long and very long lines of trucks all the way to almost like Al Arish city of goods and foods waiting to enter. And a lot of these materials get actually damaged or spoiled or expires before they even get in. So, not to mention Al Arish is a remote town in Egypt. You know, it's far away from the capital. And everybody has to go through probably Cairo airport, I would guess. I mean, I know Al Arish, they have their own airport too. They probably get direct aid that way. But the distance between the Rafah crossing and the heart of Egypt, that also might be a limiting factor. Before the war, I think aids have been coming from the Israeli side, from multiple entrances, from the sea, Mr. Khalil mentioned, from Jordan. So it was kind of relatively more a free-flowing situation compared to now.
Absolutely. And what other barriers and challenges you think, beside the political, obviously, barrier, of course, which is the most important one, are there any other logistical, practical, technical barriers or challenges that you think are also kind of halting or obstructing the flow of aid to Gaza?
I think there's some, disorganization on the Palestinian side. I don't think the food will freely end up to the needy people. Or, you know, it might have to go to the black market sometimes. Because of the war situation, there's no transportation that will actually, try to deliver food to the most needed areas. We know, like, nothing goes to Gaza, for an example, to the Gaza city up north. So there's a lot of logistic restrictions or problems on the Palestinian side trying to actually distribute the humanitarian aids. But that was my observation.
And Mr. Khalil, you want to add something to that?
Yeah, I would like to add that the media in general and overall has been promoting the idea that nothing is getting into Gaza. So it has actually discouraged people from donating. It's discouraged people from providing aid to a trusted charity. And that's not true. There is aid getting into Gaza. There are people on the ground. We're one of them. And you can get aid there. So we want to dispel the myth that nothing, because when we talk to our own community, they tell us that we heard it's closed. How can you get anything in? And they argue with us. And we tell them, here's what's happening. And it's news to them. It's a shock to them. So we really need to get the word out that, you know, as bad as it is, it's not 100% closed. There are people getting aid into Gaza.
That's a very important point. Actually, like, the media here is doing a disservice, right? It is doing a disservice by just saying, oh, everything is closed, nothing is getting in. And of course, if I want to donate money, I'll be like, why would I give my money, you know, to Life or Rahma or any other organization when in fact nothing is getting into Gaza? So again, for us as an audience, as citizens, as people who want to, you know, kindly donate, we also have to know the facts. And the facts are there is some aid. Maybe it is not enough. It is not sufficient for sure. But let's do our part and try to help trustworthy charities that are actually doing the work on the ground. Dr. Mehra, I also want to know your take on the role of international media in terms of covering the crisis in Gaza. What do you think of this particular role and how do you evaluate it?
Well, of course, I think the Western media has been pretty much not actually delivering the full truth of what's happening in Gaza. I think they caved in after the overwhelming social media material that's been viewed by pretty much everybody in the world that they have to, say something about what's happening. I can tell you, when the French doctors went to back to France, they actually were welcomed by a team of people and media in the airport. And the news was all over the country. They even have went to the European Council to actually testify to what they saw in Gaza. None of this happened when we arrived to the United States. You know, I did declare to the airport officials that I was in Gaza helping, and that's about it. Say, well, you know, welcome home. You know, my wife was waiting outside, and you know, she drove me home, and that's about it. Mm-hmm. So there's no Western media interest, and we know the media in the United States is very good. It's very professional, very effective. I don't think they have no knowledge of what's happening. If they would like to distribute the word and let people know firsthand to what we saw, they would have done that. And I think that's somewhat intentional. I have to tell you, though, my personal view, being on the ground in Gaza, basically seeing, mainly civilian casualties, men and women, and children in the hospital. My personal view, there's actually these men and children or women and children are being intentionally targeted. That's my personal view. I think there is some sort of ethnic cleansing, or I've seen genocide in my own eyes. And I like to bring that view to the rest of the world, that this is what I've seen. It's actually intentional, random, women and children genocide. This is the future people of Gaza. I truly believe with all my heart that was intentional. And the media doesn't know that. You know, I was arguing with someone who lives in Michigan, and she thinks it's all just, crossfire casualties or human shields, which is, it's kind of, honestly, it's a disgusting idea. And it's totally untrue. I've seen how, you know, random homes and random houses have been destroyed, knowing that, you know, these homes have refugees with women and children left behind in the house, because men are down on the street looking for wood, looking for water, you know, standing in line for food. And these homes have been targeted where hundreds of people are inside. They're all women and children being killed. We see them in emergency room. So I'm trying to bring my view. I mean, not, you know, people should not necessarily believe my view, but that was my impression being on the ground as an observer to what's happening over there.
Do you think, Dr. Meher, there has been some kind of maybe impact or trickle-down effect or spillover effect from the realm of social media on the realm of mainstream media when it comes to covering the Gaza crisis?
Definitely, but we should not, of course, believe everything on the social media. I mean, it lacks the credibility, but I'm sure there's a lot of videos out there that's credible. And I think that the facts that's coming from Gaza has been overwhelming. I mean, nobody can argue against it. There's overwhelming evidence that there is some sort of genocide, war crimes, you know, people dying hungry, to the point that the Western media cannot ignore anymore after 5 months of war and genocide. But I think there's some goods and bads with the social media. I'm not a social media person personally. And I've actually have to open an account with Facebook and Twitter and other, social media networks to actually get to know what's happening in Gaza. Mm-hmm. Of course, you know, a lot of them are credible, but maybe they should talk to us because we were on the ground, you know, seeing visually what's happening.
Yeah, we have a principle in the media, which is called seeing is believing. So when people actually see what is happening there inside Gaza, you know, firsthand accounts of people who are inside Gaza, that makes a huge difference. And I want to come to you with the same question, Mr. Khalil, about the impact of social media, especially, you know, the audience of social media are mostly young people, the new generation. And now they're having a different mindset. Their ideas, their thoughts, their opinions on the Gaza crisis and what's happening there is now shifting and changing, thanks in large part to what they see on social media. Would you like to comment on that, please?
It's accurate that the social media has exploded with this crisis. And I would agree with my doctor that we have good and bad social media. But it's allowed those who have information, it's allowed people that would otherwise not have a voice or have an opportunity to share facts or knowledge or opportunities. I know our social media sites have grown exponentially just talking about what we do in Gaza, right? We're not taking sides, we're not playing politics. All we do is report what we know. And those types of posts on all platforms have gone viral. I mean, people really want to get the information. So there's a thirst for information. There's a need to filter accurate and non-accurate information. But overall, I think it's healthy to have an opportunity for all these people to participate in the discussion, the solutions, the outcomes, whatever happens.
Absolutely. We'll come back to this very important discussion right after this commercial break. Stay tuned, please.
With more than 30,000 successful in vitro fertilizations, IVF Michigan is now ranked as one of America's best fertility clinics, according to Newsweek magazine. IVF Michigan fertility centers are the recognized leaders in high-quality fertility care. With locations in Bloomfield Hills and 9 other cities in Michigan and Ohio, IVF has experts in all aspects of the field. A founding member, American Board Certified Dr. Nicholas Shama, is one of the leading reproductive endocrinologists in Michigan and Ohio. He has performed over 20,000 successful IVF cases, and it's helped thousands of couples fulfill their dreams of parenthood. When it's time to get personalized care from Dr. Nicholas Shama at one of America's best fertility clinics, call IVF Michigan Fertility Centers in Michigan and Ohio toll-free at 855-952-9600. 855-952-9600. Get ready for an amazing experience at Ishtar Restaurant on 15 Mile Road in Sterling Heights. Enjoy excellent hospitality from owners Ali Abagdadi and Fatty Bonham, serving the best in Mediterranean food. Try Chef Ali Abagdadi's famous shawarma, the best Iraqi grills and food, and the best Arabic and international dishes. Dine in our authentic atmosphere or take out. Call 586-698-2585 or check us out on Facebook. Ishtar Restaurant practices all CDC guidelines and is open every day 11 a.m. to 10 p.m. Have an amazing experience today at Ishtar Restaurant, 3625 15 Mile Road, Sterling Heights.
This is Dr. Sahar Kamir. Welcome to my program, The Bridge. A monthly show bridging different cultures, communities, and faith traditions. Watch The Bridge on America's Voice of the Arab Network on all social media platforms.
Welcome back to the program, everyone. This is your host, Dr. Sahar Kamis. We're talking today about a very important and timely topic, humanitarian and medical aid to Gaza, the facts and challenges. And with me this morning discussing this important and timely topic are Dr. Maher Kifri, a physician in Michigan, and Mr. Khalil Meek with Life for Relief and Development. We were talking just before the commercial break about the role of social media and mainstream media. I want to ask you, Dr. Maher, if you think that the impact of international public opinion and grassroots mobilization, can this actually have some kind of effect or impact ultimately on the position of different countries and nations when it comes to handling Gaza?
Like you said, is ultimately, unfortunately, the effect is very slow and very limited. And I think, you know, generations and generations of the Western people have, has to go by before people understand the truth. You know, you really have to overcome this traditional media with the mainstream media, like in the United States, that's has been educating people over decades about, you know, who's the good guy, who's the bad guy. And people have to start thinking. And we have to have some sort of independent media. I love this country, and I would like to tell people the truth. I hope United States is always prosperous and successful in everything. But I would like to. I don't like people to be misled forever. But it's a big task to actually change the mentality, to change the media, to have a neutral media that's, you know, telling people the truth. I have to say one word about the humanitarian organizations, by the way. The one that actually physically made difference on the ground is Rahma Worldwide, Med Global, and now hearing from Mr. Khalil, the Life for Relief and Development. I've seen Doctors Without Borders making a difference. These are credible companies to donate to. I've seen some people collecting millions of dollars in donation, and they didn't know what to do with it. They have good intention, but they don't have like a strategy or logistic to get that inside Gaza. So good intention is not enough. You really have to trust certain organization. And I might look biased to Rahma, but I did see the physical change on the ground as far as medical supply, medical aids, and humanitarian aids.
Mr. Khalil, the halting of UNRWA that has been obviously a very, very important, you know, source of really providing help and relief, especially for Palestinian refugees for a long time. What kind of impact does that have on the current situation of the humanitarian crisis in Gaza and the ability to deliver also the needed help and relief and aid over there?
Well, the impact cannot be overstated, because UNRWA has been there, and they are the partner for many of the world's largest philanthropic donors, right? So the U.S., the USA delivers their aid to UNRWA. Many huge foundations and people who contribute to humanitarian organizations, they donate to UNRWA. So when you take them out of the picture, and they've been there the longest and they're the biggest provider of aid to Palestinians, then you've magnified the problem, you know, infinitely. And now those smaller organizations that have not banned themselves or been banned from going into Gaza are trying to make up the difference. And maybe it's possible, but then you have to fight the border crossings and all of the politics and everything to get it into Gaza. So you can't understate all of these scenarios that are all happening at once and the impact that it's having.
Absolutely. And quick question to you also, Mr. Khalil, before I go to Dr. Meher with the very same question. Have you seen any examples of successful international organizations, collaboration or support in terms of delivering the needed aid and support to Gaza?
I've seen some collaboration between Rahma and Med Global with my, you know, 15 days experience. Also, the Rahma has been also working with the Palestinian Medical Organization of Europe to bring some European doctors to enter Gaza under the umbrella of Rahma Worldwide. Rahma also worked with Kuwait to bring a medical team from Kuwait City that really helped. So there was some collaborations. I think, to be honest with you, from my observation, the vast majority of doctors who entered Gaza were due to the effort that was made by Rahma Worldwide. And under their umbrella, a lot of other organizations were able to do the same. I can't speak for their CEOs and the heads and their logistic and how they made it happen, but they did. And they should be thanked for that. They were actually pioneered the medical missions to the area that's really needing a lot of medical help.
Thank you. And you also mentioned, you know, Doctors Without Borders, another organization which is also international and doing very important work in this domain. I'll end with you, Mr. Khalil, in a quick remark. If you can also inform us about some of the important work being done by international organizations that you believe have been doing good and constructive work in terms of providing the needed help and support to Gaza.
I would like to just say that there is a lot of collaboration going on with international NGOs, and people are collaborating to join projects that others are being successful with, and vice versa. So we've been joined by several international NGOs on our tent project to deliver, you know, 100,000 tents to Gaza. We've got you know, collaboration through forums and meetings and convenings and conventions that are happening. The Arab Foundations Forum, which is a network of NGOs and philanthropists and government donors, are working to collaborate on projects for Gaza. So you can find a lot of collaboration. It's happening. People are actually trying very hard to do what they can, but the biggest impact is going to come from the political side. As soon as it's over, everybody being allowed to just, you know, help in their capacity.
Absolutely. It is just important to give a shout out to all the organizations doing important and meaningful work on the ground, whether they are local, regional, or international organizations. Unfortunately, we cannot change the political situation. We don't have a magic stick to do so as much as we would want to, but we can definitely give a lot of help and support and donation to many of these organizations doing this very important work. And I'm afraid we're coming to the end of our time today. I would like to very much thank our guests, Dr. Meher Kifri and Mr. Khalil Meek, for giving us a lot of valuable insight and giving us their time today. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Mr. Sahar.
Thank you so much. And thanks so much to all our listeners and viewers everywhere. Stay blessed. Let's pray for Gaza, and goodbye.